We turn now to a short play by J. Michael Yates. Mr. Yates was the founder and publisher of Sononese Press. His poetry collection, Great Bear Lake Meditations, is one of the most commercially successful editions of poetry in the history of Canadian literature. His radio plays have been produced by Israel, Germany, France, and Holland, as well as Canada. Realia was commissioned by the CBC in 1976 and was recorded in Vancouver shortly before the death of its principal performer, Powis Thomas. Realia by J. Michael Yates.
With one eye peering at me between the legs of a stuffed and upright hedgehog from the upside of the stacks, my new superior, Johannes Ham. Always he speaks from the other side of the stacks, Johannes Ham, supreme director of the library.
I call your attention, Mr. Nobel, to this very specimen because I cannot think of one more neutral to us both. The politics of hedgehogs, mercifully, lies dead, far in our past.
On the contrary. With all respect, sir, on the contrary. I pride myself on my lightning perspicacity and my ability to translate what I sense into associational and polemical, if necessary, terms. Surely this is why I've been appointed to such a significant post.
I say, how's that?
The politics concerning whether to catalogue the hedgehog at all, indeed, lies far in the past. However, whether to catalogue the beast living and in the best of all semblances of his habitat, or as you have him here, number CC-409-3A7, shaped by styrofoam, gimleting me with fixed plastic eyes and gathering dust. Is another question.
Oh, disgusting. You blew that into my eyes deliberately. There is my black handkerchief. I detest blinking.
Yes, you might miss something.
Probably you'll be destroyed for that impertinence.
We shall see. Through the legs of the hedgehog, you hardly seem injured.
All the same, I'm delighted to have a man of your caliber. You're quite perceptive, you know.
Quite.
I must speak to your argument.
A stuffed beast such as this has utterly nothing to do with the doctrine of Realia. With this atrocity between us, we aren't giving our patrons the thing as it really is.
Loose library thinking, young man. And to follow your reasoning would be to bring in the live animal, hypothetically. But is the hypothetical animal real, by your terms, in a mere semblance of his natural habitat? Would his behavior not be altered irrevocably? Suppose we were to place the animal and a divot of his habitat in a few square miles of shelf here. Would we then have the hedgehog ecology? Of course not. He would still be out of context. To keep the hedgehog in context, we would necessarily bring in the planet, nay, the entire universe, inside the library.
Including the great book forests?
How can you be certain the great book forests are outside the library?
The third postulate of Realia declares the book's wilderness.
The fourth postulate declares all wilderness the domain of the library.
Have you ever stuffed a book?
Oh, yes, of course, naturally. What?
Well, you've consigned everything else to taxidermy. Since you've never seen the forests yourself...
May I ask why you conjecture that?
Your favorite admonition seems to be Realia provides but one aisle per individual, and only one soul will ever occupy it.
Quite.
Now, a man of your experience can't have overlooked that one cannot view all possible exhibits from only one aisle.
I have an excellent memory, but there is something about the truth you just mentioned that causes my memory to reject it. Often I confuse the catalogue description of an exhibit with actual perception of it. It's a common occupational hazard for a librarian.
I'll describe the forests for you. The trees are very close together. The light is poor. It is neither hot nor cold. It never rains. There is no wind. The book trees never blow down. The trunks are covered with russet dust, the consistency of face powder. The same dust, several meters deep, covers the forest floor between them. The trees are various heights.
No, 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 you're altogether wrong.
The titles on the book spines have faded almost beyond legibility. It doesn't make any difference, I suppose. Never did I discover a word in any language familiar to me.
Now, while the number of book trees has never been counted, we do know that each is exactly 300 meters high.
This is no hedgehog as he really is.
Isn't he, then? How many hedgehogs did you count on your way here?
Well, none. But, of course, I came with all possible dispatch when I received my appointment.
You saw no hedgehogs?
No, but I felt they were there.
You felt?
I felt.
Have you entertained the possibility, Mr. Nobel, that we have come to the end of hedgehogs?
No.
Try to reason along with me, if only for the sake of argument.
Well,
suppose there are no more hedgehogs. If so, then it would seem that we have here, catalogued and positioned in this library, before your very eyes, all hedgehogness available.
Bulk and rubbish.
In that light, this is no stiff representation of some creature happily participating in natural selection in its own habitat. Not at all. We must see this hedgehog between us as the thing in itself, representing only itself. It is real, is realia, and we should deem ourselves most fortunate in its acquisition. Allow me to present you with a small truth which each must discover for himself. Knowledge that the artificial is but an extension of the real is the difference between mere genius and wisdom.
Sir, I don't think you would recognize a hedgehog if you were marooned on a log with one, quite frankly. What could you know of wildlife, having spent your lifetime in a library?
Are you a naturalist? Such information should be included in your dossier.
You know, naturalism is an extinct pursuit, but I should certainly recognize a hedgehog.
But have you never seen one?
No.
Smoking is forbidden in the library.
Smoking begins today.
You could be dismissed.
By whom? Bad show, old man. I'm never off guard. Now, remember that. Not only should there be smoking, but eating, drinking, dancing, and all manner of revelry in this gloomy and forlorn place. Perhaps the stacks themselves should be torn down and buried somewhere in the book forests. Realia, as for its object, recreation of the organic.
Now, these days, a cataloguing system is obsolete before fully instituted. Even to change catalog and exhibit codes, we must hire as many librarians as there are aisles. Many lose their lives through loneliness. They slip through shelves into another aisle in search of companionship, and poof, they're gone. Another cataloguer must be found to begin again at the beginning of the aisle. We try to choose people from isolated regions of the library who are accustomed to living many months without hearing another voice.
The exhibits must move. They must change. They must give birth, and they must die, all in plain view of our patrons. That is realia.
No. There's nothing in what you describe but meaningless manufacture, obsolescence, rot. By mounting the hedgehog, we endow it with immortality, with delicate control of temperature and humidity, of course. Shall we push along?
Bohin?
Forward, always forward, my boy.
How can you be sure? Which way? Appalling. It's kilometers and days of uninterrupted fraud. A lifelessness exceeding death. Plastic, metal, plaster of Paris, synthetic fur, waxen skin. Aha! What's this? I want to see you align this with your philosophy of mounted specimens.
I could contend this catalog entry is quite as mounted as the rest.
Ridiculous.
But you couldn't understand. I have never expressed to you any objection to animated presentations.
Are they or are they not metabolic?
A glance at their exhibit area should speak to your question.
Well,
Stay there. I say there, excuse me. Are you alive?
We do not address the exhibits. We are librarians.
Excuse me there.
Would you converse with a book in a log cabin with a hedgehog?
Are you alive?
One is often asked that question. One doesn't ask oneself. But why, I suppose we must be alive. Are there any alternatives? Sometimes I do doubt whether she is. She so often falls asleep in mid-performance. Speaking for myself, in the absence of verification, I believe I'm alive.
We represent the ultimate expression of life force.
Oh, my knees.
If either vitality is to be questioned, it is his. Were he alive, he would better prepare himself for the performance. He's offended when I offer to assist him. I'm afraid we don't do very well.
I see. Could it be the library ought to raise its standards in casting exhibits?
Hardly. Realia is, after all, Realia.
Oh. Oh, yes, so it is.
Perhaps it's no more fault hers than my own. Her responsibility is stasis. I am custodian of flux. More and more often now, the engine of us as a unit malfunctions. Most, perhaps all of our problems spring from the situation that we've been at this for too long, even though we're quite young. I can think of absolutely nothing further to do with her person, and I'm sure my geography is emptied of enigma for her. We don't know what to say about it. We never dreamed it would be this way, and there's nothing to do but what we're doing. Is there?
I must think about it. Thank you.
Sir! Sir!
Oh, yes?
Is there anything you can do about the temperature and humidity? It's so dreadfully dry. I'm certain it has affected my lubricity.
You kindly convey to the exhibit that the library endeavors to purvey the longest possible shelf life for the greatest number of catalog entries. Utterly democratic. Without our controlled temperature and humidity, we would soon have very few entries in the catalog. To serve the specialized needs of a few inordinate exhibits would result in elitism. And during no phase of Realia has elitism been countenanced. Tell the exhibit it must rely on its own resourcefulness.
A wax mockery of a woman bearing. Is your pit execrable taste bottomless?
The young never believe their forms under different names arrived on the planet long before they did. Hence the withering redundancy of history. Before the changeover, we instituted scheduling in pregnant women to give birth on this very shelf, if memory serves. 7 coordinators of flux in sequence went berserk. Now the library must offer all exhibits in full function around the clock, around the calendar. The Alia is very explicit on this point. The library cannot tolerate vagaries occasioned by the metabolic machine.
Indeed, this atmosphere does have a desiccating effect on one's mucus. Hey! Wait, what?
Just a moment!
I warned you earlier on, I'm never off guard. And now we shall see.
No, probably we won't see, actually. Allow me again to point out that the corridor through which you've been passing is yours alone. This one I occupy is mine. The door is the sum of your time, your space, your light. In short, your destiny. Or fate, if you wish. Seemingly infinite before and behind. To enter my aisle would be to become me. Certain death, I'm afraid. You have, shall we say, almost a sporting chance within the confines of your own.
Director Ham, that may well be the only acceptable reasoning you've... Director? Are you over there?
How rude. Never mind. Only librarians of no character can't bear solitude. I think I'm losing my finite sense of time. Possibly it's this gray light, as if equal portions of night and day had been beaten into miscibility. How many nights and days?
I fear I left you with rather the wrong impression.
There you are again. And with a blowgun. Let's see how it works when I place my arm over the end of the barrel. Thus.
Let go of it. It won't work when you do that.
Don't give me that, you old fool. You're red in the face. There. This might be useful.
Doubtless. You have catalogued our couple in coitus in your mind as a live exhibit. When you're more experienced as a librarian, you will test every exhibit exhaustively before classification, even to the point of destruction of the exhibit if necessary. Also, you suppose that exhibit unique in the library.
My senses have never yet failed me.
When I occurred in the library, the catalogue offered exclusively live exhibits of animate mass and such inanimate idiocy as a genuine Mount Everest instead of an easier-to-maintain artificial one of exactly the same dimensions. Replications offer the supplementary advantage of sustaining their dimensions. In-depth studies have shown that any sense of change whatsoever elicits profound negative response from library patrons.
Absurd. My very presence here is the embodiment of change.
I've noticed, I sensed that civilization was drifting from its emblematic origins. The concept of realia was being interpreted far too literally. Why, the numbers of our maintenance personnel to feed the beasts, cultivate flora, clean cages, and carry away carcasses far, far exceeded the numbers of our patrons.
These weeks, or months, I haven't seen a single patron.
Are you not a patron?
Well, I have been duly and officially assigned here.
Perhaps then you're an exhibit.
Oh.
My philosophy has the virtue of economy, Mr. Nobel. Just think of the excellent staff reductions I've made by phasing out the living, by dispelling the ghosts of authenticity.
I have not faulted your budgetary genius.
Now there are only two of us, and I must tell you, in all confidence, please, I'm certain we can reduce staff by at least 50% more.
There's a thought. The blowgun is in my hands now. I have a clear shot between the cube of hashish and the blue pansies. But which end did he place to his lips? In this unmapped heart library, one can't take chances with germs.
I think you'll find the display ahead and above of inordinate interest.
Preference of one catalogue entry above another by a librarian is a direct infraction of unnatural law.
Now, inasmuch as you're obviously too young ever to have seen rain, I think you can consider this normal library scientific procedure.
Oh, that's different.
Yeah, you have it. CFP-0158.
What? My God. What is that there?
A thunderhead. Cloud. The best in human memory.
Really?
A plastic, like the rest of the system. The water is real enough. It's otherwise flawless. You'd better use one of those things over there.
What is it?
I remember the term, but if you open it up and hold it over your head, it will keep you dry. Now, if you will give me your attention, you can see here, through this complicated system of temperature-controlled currents of air, we achieve a convection.
May I remind you, you are a librarian and a gentleman.
Moisture condenses within the Thunderhead as it moves near the simulated mountain range.
Some of those peaks are thousands of feet high.
Voici il pleut. And it rains over this rather considerable square mileage of imitation landscape. in a wide range of plastics, each species of flora peculiar to this exhibitscape. Make a note, we really should expunge the term landscape, you know. Each at its appropriate altitude.
Make a note.
These head-high ferns and tiger lilies are engaged.
And the fauna, you see, they're moving in and out of the timber, giving birth, feeding on one another, and dying. Their skin, feathers, or fur, respectively, have been thoroughly treated with waterproof sprays. I don't think we'll need these rain things any longer.
Curious instruments. What are these uncomely creatures?
All gods, demons, and other supposedly debatable presences. The Loch Ness creature, Sasquatch, three species of Yeti. In short, the supernatural naturalized.
Where there is room for debate, there is doubt. Where doubt roosts, so does fear. Gods? Monsters? Who would stoop to debate the existence of presences as diminutive and unimaginative as these?
No one now. Finally, you and I are reasoning together.
Don't stake a life on it.
The patron once worshipped and feared these deities, demons and the monsters. They feared all these for many reasons, but most of all, they feared them because of one attribute common to all of the creatures: abstraction. Not only did they fear the abstractions, after a time they began to fear their fear of abstractions, and then to fear their fear of fear. In order to sustain supremacy of the library, all mysteries must be considered counter-realia. Note, there are no dark corners in the library.
Nor are there any well-illuminated corners.
We must ensure that no question arises whose answer is not the exclusive possession of the library. Because most of our patrons believed in one, and sometimes all, of the abstractions, it was necessary to accede to their realia. The process of disabstraction was less involved than you might suppose. We programmed every variant hallucination of each abstraction ever committed to record in order to arrive at what you see before you. These preter-human composites, logically of a perfection beyond the skills of time and dream, are as finite and harmless as you are, as authentic as any exhibit in the catalogue. They no longer inspire worship, neither do they still fear.
Clearly. However, as they were never demonstrably alive...
Can you demonstrate that any exhibit in the catalogue was ever living? Remember, the only proof acceptable to their realia method must be reproducible and therefore predictable.
This sort of taxidermy does not concern me. I'm not categorically against it. But belief in the unreal is scarcely consonant with organic realia.
To many, the mounted exhibits are much more real than phenomenal forms.
Now, where are you going, Tag? What's the difference? If I can establish the existence of but a single living cell, which Ham has somehow overlooked, anything is possible. But I need strength. I cannot effect the revolution by myself. The revolution is not for me, but for the patrons. I must reach them. Somehow. Now. The shelf tops. I can see the top from the floor. But I have to try. Oh, it would be good to take the blowgun with me, but no librarian on record has ascended with his worldly possessions. Oh, careful. That finger of a saint at the glass housing is delicate. And the blown emu aches. Not even close. He'd have to enter my aisle to get a clear shot, but he had to make the gesture. With that shot, he acknowledges and authenticates the revolution. Now, time is everything. This must be the top shelf. But I couldn't see this shelf from the one beneath it. Day by day, the distance between shelves increases so. Well, I must accept that I am on top. Now, if I can just stand... Good God. Had I fallen? It has never occurred to me before that one can die quite as easily in his own aisle as he can in any other. No walls in any direction. No ceiling. My aisle seems to lead on forever, before and behind. Left and right, only rows of shelves vanishing into the dim library twilight where the eye fails, invariably just at the point when one feels that given just a little more light, there would be something. There, just beyond the last shelf, the eye can gather it in. I'm not a patron. The purpose of this climb must be fulfilled. Ladies and gentlemen of the library! Damn the automatic hush system. We are cast here together, partly of desire and partly out of circumstances. Outside are only the book trees and the russet dust which licks about their bases. Now, the dust of the book trees is not the dust one blows from the synthetic fur of a stuffed hedgehog. For librarians and patrons alike, only the library is habitable. Without the library, we would be without the felicity of knowing ourselves to be exhibits, patrons and librarians. Now, reason may well insist that if all answers to all questions are within the library, then there can be nothing outside it. And if the library is only a vivid dream, we must reason to the conclusion that we are ourselves manufactured of abstract imagination. Intelligence leads us invariably into such ambushes. For the sake of basic life processes, we must suspend intelligence. Accept without evidence that the great book forests exist outside the library. Accept that the library and all within it are real, and ignore, with all possible resolution, any apparent paradox or mystery. That I cannot see you, my audience, does not matter. One cannot expect all to ascend. It is my professional mandate to ascend symbolically for us all. Although Director Hare would have us believe otherwise, I know you are there in your respective aisles. I can feel your presence, and I am certain you can hear me. In times of crisis, the reason bolts in terror, but feelings never fail. I have risen in order to bring before you a situation of library philosophies and puns, which can only be resolved by you, patrons and exhibits, in your collective wisdom. Our endeavors to achieve some kind of level of administration. It is my sad duty to report that constantly fails.
Heard Realia, a play for radio by J. Michael Yates. In the cast, you heard Powis Thomas as Ham, Peter Brockington as Nobel, and Diana Belshaw and Bill Ryder as the two exhibits. Technical operations by Bill Seaback, with sound effect by Lars Eastholm and Jyoti De Silva. Direction was by Don Mullock. Next week, a collection of poetry, opinions, sounds, and stories, all to do with Ring. Program conceived by J.J. McCall. The Hornby Collection was produced in Vancouver by Don Mullock, with the assistance of Rosemarie Silton.